Welcome back. We are the second day of the SMR event, the Art and Science of Innovation in Singapore. And we're back with Ruby Cho, partner at Brandnographer. And before, well, welcome.
Thank
Thanks
you.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm very honored. And I love to share a little bit more about what's the perspective from Asia and, any questions.
We were talking, before recording, we were talking about ethnography. You were explaining me why is it important and what are the specifics of this methodology of research. Can you really tell us more?
Sure. I think I can start with why I'm interested in this area and then, brand our company, a little bit of a company as well. Brandnographer is an innovation consultancy specializing in ethnography. So we really enjoy working with all visionary innovators. So that's why, which makes ethnography is such an important tool to help them to create more human-centric innovation. And so just to answer your question, what actually is ethnography? Ethnography, I believe this is like being like a cultural detective. So you need to go and immerse your life in the local culture, and then you identify all the interesting findings, the cultural nuances and difference, and then you share this discoveries to your clients. But I think what actually makes ethnography stand out from traditional qualitative research, like focus group or like in-depth interviews, they are truly immersing people's life and daily habits. So which means that you can definitely tell their true behavior, but not something they express it through a verbal communication to you. And that makes such a difference if you are doing something, if you are creating something new and you want to design it from consumers' needs, unmet needs, and from their daily habit. And I think this is something that you're looking for.
When it comes to extracting data, I understand that ethnography is really peculiar because it allows you to really immerse yourself into everyday life. So actually to become, we were saying before, to become a research participant yourself. Does it allow you to extract data that otherwise you would not even be able to communicate to the interviewer?
So my understanding is when you're talking about how to interpret and extract the data, and how should we do it, right?
Yes.
Okay, gotcha. So I think how we interpret and then how we capture the data, we have quite a lot of different ways of doing it. I think one way is we definitely need to capture all the data through cameras and also conducting something like not only traditional ethnography, which is just following their life by physically presence there. This is a way of doing it, but I think when we think about like in the past few years, like COVID, it is something that obviously much more challenging and difficult to do it. But I think so that's why I think what ethnography is something that is very important for us to consider as well. So what is an ethnography is? It is online ethnography. So this is something that you are basically asking a consumer, you are asking a consumer to capture their life to you by, for example, like putting like a camera or like capturing like videos of their life and then share it on the online community. So this is something that we will also do to capture the data as well. So there are a lot of ways of doing it, but I think this two ways is the traditional one and something that is from online and offline.
And what's the main difference between online and offline in terms of the information that you gather?
So I think the major difference from what actually will capture it from online is you don't have any time limitation and boundaries. So which means that whenever the client, the users or the consumers, they want to capture the data, they will just share it to you. So we used to have a study that we use online ethnography to capture an, all the gamers' habit using, and then we want to capture all the moment of truth. What is moment of truth is whenever they want to make a purchase from their mobile, they need to share that to us. This is something that we can't do it in offline ethnography, because we can't just stand like as stand with them and walk with them and sleep with them. And perhaps some of the time that he wants to make a purchase on gaming is in his restroom. So this is something that is definitely a very powerful tool for using ethnography, that to capture all the moment of truth. So we asked them to do all the live recording to capture the moment when they decided to make a purchase. So we capture all the different occasions and scenario, and this is really powerful for the clients to understand what actually, from all this moment of truth, what types of occasions they need to create for the gamers to be the best scenario for them to make their purchase decision.
So are you interested in the in what triggers the what triggers buying buying habits?
Yes, yes, for sure. I think this is the why I am very passionate about ethnography, because you can apply this in a lot of circumstances and all types of studies as well. For example, the case study that I just shared is something about triggers and behavior, but it can definitely go beyond different area as well. But getting back to your question, purchase behavior and triggers is definitely something I am interested to understand, because the entire purchase decision making journey, and then how, and then, you know, what is the what is the trend of how it evolved, it would be very amazing for me.
What are some of these triggers, just for my curiosity?
For the gamer study or?
Yeah, let's have an example.
Ah, okay. I think there's some very interesting findings that I can share. Is what are the common triggers for the gamers to make purchase? Is they have a feeling, which we find it, there is a psychology terms called the near miss effect. So they always feel that they are very, very close to winning, and they are that close to win. So that will, that is the major trigger for them to press the buy button. So this is something that actually I think is very powerful, because this is not something that we find it from one respondent or the one user's, a gamer's behavior, but it is consistently happening on most of them. Of course, some of the other triggers, maybe they want to just have a leisure, you know, they just want to clear their mind, you know, that of course different triggers for them. But the extremely powerful and the extreme and what makes them have a strong push, then we can see a pattern of this effect.
And are there many differences in the triggers, for example, within the gaming industry and other industries? Mm. Are there common triggers?
That is a very good question. I think for some of the reason, I would see that there would be something similar. But the way that I have just mentioned, which is the most powerful one, that they have the feelings of getting very, very close to winning, then that part, I think it is very that is very close to gaming specific, or I would say that it is more into like a gambling perspective as well.
When we talk about the gaming industry, I think we all have the impression that that's something reserved to younger generations, to younger demographics. Is this still true?
That's a very interesting question, because I think I definitely see the trend is evolving, because before that, gaming industry used to, we always have some stereotype that is male driven. But I think several years before that, what the study we did for our clients, we already see that there is a rise from the female gamers is upcoming, and is in the trend of it's becoming a big trend. So right now, if you're saying that is it only specialized in like a younger generation? I would say that this is getting more and more different types of age group, and I think they are also trying to attract different types of age groups. And it you can definitely see that there are a trend with a more customized age group and targeting for different types of games.
So I understand that ethnography consists in immersing yourself into the physical world of your research participants. Mm-hmm. How about the digital world? How about the metaverse, for example? Could it be transposed in the digital environment as well?
You mean for the gaming?
Well, in general.
So if you're asking the trend of metaverse, I think I'm still observing or like exploring its potential, and I think it's just still under like era of development. So I think it would be not like an easy questions for me to answer right now, mm-hmm. because it is still in like under a very strong development stage. So there are a lot of like it is talking about when we talk about Web 3.0. So there are a lot of great potential. We can see that, you know, the cryptocurrency and also it is the GameFi. These are all very exciting developments. Mm-hmm. But if we are talking about what actually has happened lately, or especially in Asia, I wouldn't see that there would be a very strong, mature development, mm-hmm. that can be applied right now.
You briefly mentioned cryptocurrencies. Mm-hmm. What are some possibilities that you see for cryptocurrencies and NFTs, I guess, within the gaming industry? Because my perception is that in the last year or so, cryptocurrencies really lost their appeal for some of us.
I believe so. So that's the reason why I think if we're talking about the relevancy between the gaming and also the cryptocurrency, I think they definitely have, and also the GameFi. And I think that beforehand we heard about a lot of exciting development about, you know, even you can use, if you are playing game, you're earning money, right? Mm-hmm. This is a very attractive scenario, I think, for every one of us. I mean, even for me. but when we are looking one more step into this area, there are so many things that are still under the development, and at this moment, I think it is quite difficult for us to evaluate whether it is ready for a mature gaming to have a correlation, direct correlation with them.
How about artificial intelligence? How do you approach it at Brocknographer? Mm. And how do you see the role of research evolving together with AI?
AI, especially from generative AI, I think this is a very that's definitely a very exciting development compared with the previous like metaverse development. I would see that they are definitely applying applicable into a commercial setting, like and which is already happening right now. For example, their collaboration with Microsoft, and I would believe that this is definitely a big upcoming trend, and there would be a lot of exciting change here. If we're talking about applying AI for ethnography, I think this is a very, very interesting question that I keep thinking about it. So, if is ethnographer will replaced by AI, or is there like like an AI ethnographer that can help us to do our work? So I think my stand or my understanding is no. The reason why I'm saying this is because we are. If we are talking about the nature of when we think about the nature of conducting or doing ethnography, you're understanding humans' culture, you're understanding their like how the humans' life, and this is and if you're and what understand human. Is human. So I think this is what I would believe that why we are still exist and why we would not be replaced.
What are some elements that you think cannot be grasped by AI?
I think the way that we observe, there are so many because if we're talking about like AI conducting their work, even for the AI that is happening right now, they have the generative AI, but still they are coming with an algorithm, and then they come with machine learning, with different types of data processing for and for the answer of AI. But for ethnography, we're talking what we're seeing, what we're observing, there are so many different scenarios. So, if we're talking about if you are you need to be an ethnographer, and you need to what is the key skill set is you need to be a good observant, and by becoming a good observant, that means that you have to be, yeah, you have to be discerning, and you have to. There are so many things that you need to pay attention to, and when we are talking about AI on the other side, there are so many things that is under a controlled setting, which means that if we are exploring to the world from an from a ethnographer perspective, when we are exploring the culture, it is not in a controlled setting. As you're basically you're exploring something, there's a lot of unknown, which is in is already in contrast to the setting of the AI. So that's the reason why I think if you're exploring and you're identifying something unknown and some cultural difference or the nuances, you're from a very you're more from a exploratory perspective rather than like you're summarizing things from an AI perspective that from my understanding.
Does it mean that the role of the ethnographer is one of the few roles that are not at risk of being replaced by AI?
I am actually, I think I believe that I am an optimist, which I believe that there are so many, I mean, so many things that AI actually is helping us out to do a better work. So I think someone also asked me that, are you worried about the future of consultancy? And because, you know, AI is so powerful. But I think I have thought about that for a while. But I do believe that that is a necessity for us to exist. So it is not about would AI do our job, but I think is if we are not embracing the new technology, if we are not stop learning new things, then I believe that, you know, of course, you are not only replaced by AI, you are definitely replaced by the wave of the trend, the new trends. So I think as long as you keep learning, and then you understand that what actually can help you to help you to do your job better, then I have a big faith for us to. We will definitely do well.
What's the biggest challenge you're facing right now at Brandnographer?
You mean for the challenge?
Yes.
The current challenge?
Yes.
I think the current challenge is I would like to let more people understand the power of ethnography. Because I think many clients understand and about ethnography, but I think they are still a little bit hesitant to use it, because that part I can understand, because it takes some time and the sample size is not big, so you know sometimes you, which means that you need more time on conducting the fieldwork. But I think the way that we need to understand is conducting an ethnography, and then the value and the value of doing it is definitely something that is very worthwhile. So I think this is the key challenge for me to let more people know about it.
Ruby, thank you very much. I learned a lot about ethnography today. And so I hope it was fun for you, as it was for me.
Likewise. Thank you so much for having me. And
it's a pleasure.
Lovely, such a lovely conversation.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.